Question that it looks like you are also doing kind of austerity. There must be someone above you also. So kindly explain me from where you are getting this your power. In a materialistic terminology, just imagine you are a boss. Obviously you have one more of your boss, and your subordinate comes and asks you that, yeah, you are doing a nice thing, but who is your boss? So one might feel actually offended. You will say that you talk to me, my boss and I will communicate separately. But Brahmaji, he is a very honest person, and he doesn't take any credit about his creation. Actually speaking, when Brahmaji was born, at that point of time, he was kind of bewildered. He didn't understand what is the purpose of his creation. Everywhere is just darkness. And then he meditated on Lord Krishna for several thousands of years. And Krishna then revealed to him, and at that point of time, when he received the knowledge from Krishna, he actually got a glimpse of spiritual world as well. In his prayers of Brahma Sanhita, we see these lines like Venum Konantam Arvinda Dalaya Saksham, that Chintamani Prasara Sadmusu Kalpa Ruksha. He is actually able to see the spiritual world. So in one sense, Brahmaji first became pure devotee, able to communicate with the Lord, see his spiritual world, see his pastimes, and after that he was given service. And after this, Krishna instructed, create a system, write a software, and manufacture a protocol where each and every living entity which I am sending to you should be thoroughly roasted, fried out, and have no more desire to enjoy in this material world. The intrinsic problem of enjoying in this material world, that we are not the controllers. Anytime we plan something, we'll do this, that, and there are obviously certain factors which are beyond our reach, and they manifest at 11th hour, and our plans are just smashed. So Brahmaji, when he was given this instruction to create the universe, it's a kind of asking somebody to create a prison house with a different kind of torture system. So Brahmaji, by nature, when he is a pure Vaishnava, and obviously one of the Vaishnava qualities is compassion. He was highly compassionate towards all living entities. And if, just imagine, any of you has been given such a service, that to punish someone who doesn't come to class on the time, nobody will like that, to punish kind of, and especially to other devotees. So the souls which are sent to Brahma, they are from kind of spiritual world in one sense. So Brahmaji, to take up this service, it was not that he was very excited about this. He wanted to create, but nothing that we should give torture to other living entities. But Garanto was explaining that Brahmaji, he did this service which he didn't like in first place, and he perfected in that service. So that's why he is actually our first Acharya. he performed the service which he didn't like to the perfection. And we see in this verse, when Arjuna is inquiring about the creation and Brahmaji's power, he is very clear about his understanding and he is passing the same knowledge. So being a very very transparent person, he is not, when we say all glories to Guru and all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all means how much percent? We actually mean 98% glories to Guru and at least 2% should be mine. I mean, I have also done something, some effort from my side also. But when we say all glories, all means 100%. So Brahmaji, nowhere he says that Krishna, he is just like sitting and playing flute, but all the efforts and intellectual design, all has been put forward by me only. Nowhere Brahma takes even a single credit. Even his intellectual abilities, other capabilities, 100% glories, we pass them on to Lord Krishna. In this particular verse, I would like to emphasize on the aspect of humility. Humility, Pradhanat Maharaj in one of his lectures, he just told that humility practically means just honesty. So how is honesty and humility, they are connected to each other? In material consideration, when you think of humility, it means humiliation, practically speaking. When you deride someone or tell that your work is not up to the mark, or prove he is inferior than others, and especially you are inferior than me, that way of humiliation is a torture in material sense. Means making you feel that you are not worth and you are insignificant. And in one sense, it's a comparison. Means compared to me, you are insignificant. Compared to me, you are inferior. So this concept of humility, when you speak in outside world, people feel that it's actually weakness of heart. One who doesn't have enough capabilities or conquer, he is the one who accepts this position of humility. But Arjuna Maharaj very vividly explained in his lecture that humility is actually the source of absolute power. Humility is the state of a consciousness where we completely recognize that we are actually insignificant, and whatever power we are having, it is given by Lord. We are just instruments. When we perfectly understand this principle that I am not the doer, Krishna is the doer, and I am just simply the instrument. So if I act according to His will, so actually I am accessing the power of Krishna, the power of absolute truth. So that power of humility is supersedes any other power in the creation. Sometimes our false ego, we try to think that, okay, Krishna is doer sometimes when things go nicely, I am doer. But this false ego tries to tune us in other frequencies, and humility tries to tune us to the absolute power of God. So when we actually understand the principle of humility, it's actually a very beautiful principle. We are actually just being honest. All our intellectual abilities, physical capabilities, they can be taken away at any point of time. So we are actually being very grateful to Krishna for having them given us in care of us. And if you make a right choice of using them for the Lord's service, then that's the purpose we are giving all the abilities. So there is nothing to be proud of whatever we are having. It is like something borrowed plume. Just imagine a crow who has got some 10-15 peacock feathers and plumes, and he has put that in his back, and the crow is dancing. It might look that he is a very attractive creature, but in due course of time all the plumes will fall and his real nature is hardly anybody is getting attracted. So all our whatever achievements we are having, we are able to perform in this world, they are actually borrowed plumes from other people. From Krishna. So when we understand this concept of humility, that means we are recognizing that we are actually insignificant and Krishna is the doer. And even that Krishna, when we please Krishna with our attitude of humility and selfless devotion, then we can attract His mercy. And with that we can have access to His power, and we can do an impossible, means very amazing task as performed by our acharyas. I'd like to tell one story which comes in Bhagavatam 4th Canto 19th chapter about Maharaj Prithu. Maharaj Prithu, he is the son of King Vena, and he was actually born after churning the body of Vena. And when Maharashtra was born, actually it was supposed to be for the establishment of religious principles, which were actually destroyed by his father all over the universe. So, as a part of establishing religious principles, Maharaj Prithu, he was conducting Ashwamedh Yajna. So, to conduct Ashwamedh Yajna is not a small thing. It's not like a horse is roaming around some corner or whatever and just catching and do the sacrifice. Horse goes all over the world, universe, wherever he wants. Army follows that horse to complement. It's actually a symbol of conquering the entire territory. And when that horse comes back, then there is an elaborate sacrifice to perform it. And we can't even imagine what kind of sacrifice at various times they perform. To perform such a one kind of Ashwamedh sacrifice is considered a lifetime achievement, even at the Satyuga. And King Prithu, he managed to perform 99 sacrifices, horse sacrifices. So, anybody who can perform 100 horse sacrifices, he is eligible to become a king of heaven. So Indra got alerted, this guy is almost reaching to my standard. So King Indra, he started making plans, how I can fill his the last sacrifice. So when this particular horse, sacrificial horse, it was tied with the golden chain next to the sacrificial arena, King Indra came in the garb of a sannyasi. Not the Vaishnava one, with the different color and the stuff and all that, moving, having ashes all over the body. King Indra came and he stole that horse. And Atrimuni, he found out that this horse is taken away by Indra. So he instructed the son of King Prithu that your sacrificial horse has been taken away, and without that your 100 sacrifices cannot be completed. So immediately son of Prithu, he took his weapon and started chasing the Indra. But as soon as Indra saw that this son of Prithu is chasing me, Indra immediately himself became invisible and left the horse there. So he got the horse back, son of Prithu. And again, as soon as the sacrificial arena was prepared again, Indra again came in the garb of a sannyasi, again some different sannyasi, stole it. Actually, they say that whatever dresses Indra has taken, he is actually initiating different irreligious systems of the so-called renouncing order, having materialistic desires in mind. So this son of Prithu, he again followed him, but he didn't kill Indra because he was again in the garb of sannyasi. And it happened repeated times. After some time, the rishis then found King Prithu, and Prithu really became enraged that actually I am performing sacrifice for the pleasure of Lord Vishnu and somebody is putting obstacles into it. So King Prithu immediately took his weapon and decided that he will charge King Indra for his offenses. And all the rishis assembled there, he told Prithu that we did not worry. We will perform the kind of sacrifice with which our own mantras will ask, will invoke Indra to come and will sacrifice him in this fire pit. So that kind of power rishis were having to sacrifice the king of heaven. So Indra was like highly terrified with the kind of activity was going on. And these rishis, they prepared everything and about to start sacrifice, that time Lord Brahma appeared. Lord Brahma told Prithu that your purpose of coming to this world is to establish religious principles. You already performed 99 Ashwamedh Yajna. So the purpose of pleasing Lord Vishnu is already accomplished in one sense. If this you perform this 100 Yajna, Indra is going on and on to create so many religious systems, and he will take all devious means to stop this sacrifice. It will create a lot of nuisance across the universe. So I suggest that if you can prevent yourself from this last sacrifice, it will be good for the rest of the universe. Let Indra have his post, and if you can skip from this sacrifice. It is something like you are asking a student, engineering or whatever, he has gone through all his exams, and final semester of final paper, you ask him that you drop off from this degree. Or some cricket batsman. He is like hitting about 8th century, and at 99 we are asking that you declare the match. So anybody who is on the verge of accomplishing the most difficult task, and we should be glorified across the history. Very difficult to give up such kind of task, no matter who says what, because we are in that mood of showing or conquering. So King Prithu, when he heard this instruction of Brahmaji, he immediately complied. He told that, okay, I accept your instruction, and I won't be conducting this 100 sacrifice. So Lord Vishnu, he was so pleased, he personally appeared in front of Prithu, and with him, backside was Indra also, when he appeared. Means, King Prithu performed 99 sacrifice, but that didn't please Lord Vishnu as much as this last sacrifice of keeping it. So when Lord Vishnu came, he glorified so much Prithu, and he asked that, you ask whatever benediction you want. King Prithu said that, King Prithu also offered the prayer, offered obeisances, and he told that as a father, without any consideration, means without asking anything from his son, without his son asking anything from him, he provides and supplies his necessary necessities. So kindly, whatever is you feel best for me, please supply accordingly. And this Indra, when he was with Lord Vishnu, Indra also actually offered his full obeisances. Kind of what a sacrifice, and even Prithu Maharaj picked him up and embraced. And Maharaj, Radhanath Maharaj says in one of his lectures that this King Indra, he actually came and offered his obeisances to Prithu and begged forgiveness for what all obstacles he had put in the final sacrifice. But in case Prithu Maharaj again made up his mind to perform the last sacrifice again, Indra is again going to put lot of obstacles. So the kind of humility or kind of attitude Indra was showing, it was not the genuine one. If he was actually showing his grateful for allowing him to keep his position. So we can see that Vishnu even didn't look at the Indra, he didn't have any conversation with him, he just glorified Prithu. So what actually attracts the heart of a Lord is humility. So that humility and pridelessness, selfless devotion, all these qualities attract Lord much more than any so-called achievements in our life. There is this story of Amrish Maharaj, as all of us know. This Amrish Maharaj, he was performing fast for a long time, and Durvasamuni came asking for the prasadam. And this Amrish Maharaj, when he was supposed to break the fast, and Durvasamuni went to take bath, and that time was like missing. If he missed the amount, missed the time of fast, then his entire fasting of so many days won't be accomplishing its result. So he just took a little charanamrita of Lord, which is considered actually breaking and not breaking both. And Durvasamuni was so enraged. And when he cursed Amrish Maharaj, Sudarshan Chakra appeared and started chasing Durvasamuni. So when Durvasamuni was running at different he went to Lord Shiva and Brahma, asking them what can be done, he went to Lord Vishnu also. So one small boy, he asked this question that, as per the description what comes in Bhagavatam, the Sudarshan Chakra was almost chasing him. It's as if it was burning back of Durvasamuni. And when he was stopping and inquiring, it definitely takes some time if I'm asking solution from someone. And at that point of time, why this Sudarshan Chakra didn't just cut through him? It's something like tiger is chasing me, and I'm stopping at cyber cafe to search on Google that what is the solution to run away from this. So Maharaj, he answered that although Sudarshan Chakra was chasing him, but when Durvasamuni stopped for Lord Shiva or Brahma to inquire, he was in utter mode of humility and submissiveness that please help. Because of that, his mood, the Sudarshan Chakra, he just hung for a while. And whenever, as soon as Durvasamuni realized that, okay, here I am not getting my solution, I need to find it something else. And again, when his mood came back to original, Sudarshan Chakra picked up his own speed. We can again see that this particular principle of humility, how it is so important in our practical life. so many conflicts and so many problems can be resolved if you just take one step back. That actually pleases the Lord. Achievement in itself is not so glorious compared to the mood in which we perform that. This particular, regarding the service attitude, there are different tests. That I remember in they're explaining, one of my friend in he works in the military, and they're explaining that whenever some person, soldier comes to test him, they give him some assignment. Means the commander will come and tell that, okay, you dig 3 feet by 2 feet by 2 feet, that much ditch you dig it here, and he thinks that they want to take his physical capabilities. So with all force, like sweating anything, he's digging it. And after having the entire dish almost done, the commander comes and says, oh no, I asked to dig you there, why are you digging here? And at that point of time, when that immediate response, that is checked. So different people have different reactions. Someone might say that, okay, you asked me to dig there, fine, I'll dig there, anyway I want my job. So another person might be thoroughly fried out, he'll say that, forget it, I know sure you asked me to dig here only, and I'm going to dig here only. If you want, you take this as my assignment. Anyway, after digging here and there, it doesn't make much difference. Some people may say that, okay, I'll dig it there, but first of all, you accept that in first place you asked me to dig here. After accepting, then only I'll think of someone else. So, the way we approach this 11th hour situation, that actually decides our inner core genuine attitude. Prabhupada says that the greatness of a person has to be estimated by his ability to tolerate provoking situations. Greatness of a person has to be estimated by his ability to tolerate provoking situations. These provoking situations, they actually come in our life every now and then. And especially whenever our integrity is questioned, that's a very difficult time. That whenever somebody says that whatever you speak and whatever you act, there is no relevance, and then we try to justify so many things, that's the time when actually our real nature comes out. All this theory, philosophy, how much it has actually changed our heart, that can be tested at that point of time. This difference between honesty and integrity is that honesty means I accept that something, I have done something or I have not done something, and I accept it. And integrity means I promise that I'll do something or I'll not do something, and I stick to it in my actions. So integrity in one sense is much more difficult. And integrity in one sense, it even depends on the mercy of Lord also. From our side, we can just have that desire. So it is said that when the devotee, or when we are honest to Krishna, then Krishna protects our integrity. Just imagine, means it's a very crude example, but at this stage of our spiritual life, if we happen to go back, and then Krishna is kind of killing demons every day, and he gives us stuff that, okay, this demon I have killed, and now we have to, it's a problem with the disposal system of Vrindavan sanitary system, we have to dispose it off, please dig some ditch or whatever. So we might think that why this service is given to some others are dancing and playing and I'm given this service. So one might think that we may even question Krishna that who asked you to kill this demon? There must be some other way of killing demon. Or you should have thought of previously only how to dispose of before killing demon. So when it, all these arguments actually they are in back of our mind to avoid the services. It is said that when intelligent person, they apply their most of their intelligence to protect their comfort, physical comfort. So they have so many plans, and we suggest so many other alternatives, how it can be done this way, that way. It is not our, we are giving some genuine plan. It is more or less that how without me this can be done. So we have to actually imbibe this mode of service attitude, and we should be very eager to accept it. Maharaj says that for any kind of service, we should put our physical comforts and our own wants in the backside. And when we put others and God in front, then actually that kind of mood is pleases Krishna a lot. So although we know so many principles, but when we try to apply in our practical life, it's very difficult. It's something like one child is playing on a seashore and he builds a nice castle in the sand on shore, and he has done very nice castle, and tide is rising, ocean waves are coming, and when child sees that the ocean waves are threat to his castle, then he starts digging the trench, and that trench is full. Then he tries to build some dam, and the dam is devastated, and at the end the child just throws his body in front of castle, try to protect it, but anyway the waves come and dismantle everything, and parents sitting nearby, they are just laughing, haha, how foolishly he attached to his sand castle. But in practical life, parents themselves, they are putting so much effort and building their own castles in LGB and condo, getting so many things together and having so many desires, so many relatives, children, family, this, that. And when old age starts creeping in, when they have so many protection plans, this insurance, that insurance, but ultimately at some point of time, this time is going to take toll of everyone. And that time, this self-realized suggests, they just laugh that, see, haha, this person, he knew so much philosophy, but in practical life, how much he was able to apply it. I met one student that I remember that he had come to our classes and attended some lectures also. And then I asked him that, I didn't see you after that, what happened? He replied that, actually I came to your classes and you chanted Hare Krishna, right? Yeah, so I took this bit back and bits also. I chanted for 2-3 days on that, but not much effect actually. So I skipped it and tried something else. So the current age, when you have this habit of this instant food and the fast jets and everything you want in a matter of time, fast computer processors, and then something is taking a long time, we are not able to tolerate. Even after coming to Krishna consciousness, we expect that just Hare Krishna, within some time you just realize soul. And if you are not getting that realization, skip this process and try something else. So, especially when we are actually going in outside world, it's compared to a swarm of mosquitoes. Mosquito is always ready to bite and suck the blood. So when we are going out, there are so many billboards and advertisements. Eat this, wash this, look at this, touch this, taste this. So with so much propaganda, our intelligence and mind is just swayed away across. I don't remember exact words, but the translation goes like, our mind is compared to a monkey. Just imagine a monkey and you ask him to sit at one place. It's impossible. After within a few seconds he'll jump somewhere else. Imagine a monkey which has been drunk with the liquor and you instruct him something, and what is the possibility that he'll follow the instruction? Imagine a monkey who has been drunk and which has been haunted by ghosts. There is no way that he can follow anybody's instruction. And he can even keep a calm. And the monkey which has been drunk, haunted by ghosts, and stung by a scorpion. So, at that point of time, it's just next to impossible that we can expect that the monkey will behave very nicely. Our mind is compared to that monkey. We are actually intoxicated with our so much possessions. We are actually beaten by so many temptations of outside world and haunted by so many materialistic desires. Asking this mind to sit at one place and practice some Krishna consciousness is next to impossible thing. So many R&Ds we do, but whenever we try to control the mind, it has its own way to handle the things. Sometimes and even while the question answer, we don't ask, ideally we should ask only general questions which actually helping us in our attitude, how we can improve, how we can improve on sadhana and service and quality of consciousness. One person just a few days back, he asked this question to Chandramouli Maharaj that it is said that Brahma, with all his planet system, after dissolution of the universe, he can go back to Earth. But it is even said that the soul who comes to the material world, he is given a position of Brahma. And after that, if he couldn't perfect his life, then he has to continue in this material world. So what is actually appears contradictory, whether Brahma goes back or not? So Maharaj is that there are millions of universes. The Brahmas who actually realize that they are insignificant, they are all their abilities are given by Krishna, they are creating on Krishna's behalf. With that mode, whenever they are exhibiting on behalf of Krishna, definitely at the end of life, they are going to be grateful to Krishna, no matter how long it is. And they have to be consistent with all the attitude, and definitely they will make it back to God. And any other soul which is thinking at the end of life that no, I have, I am able to do something, these are some of my achievements, will definitely continue in this material world for the sake of his so-called playing and creating and all that. So whether our Brahma goes back or not, Maharaj is there, you don't take tension. you worry about, you just chant Hare Krishna and you go back to your life. What happens to other people, you don't have to think about that. I just would like to conclude with the some of the important points about humility, especially regarding chanting. There is one story about Arjuna, how he is controlling mind by remembering the Lord. Arjuna, when he went to the, there was this task when Pandavas were exiled to forest in their 13 years. At that point of time, Indra, he faced some problems. This particular host of demons called as Nimata Kavachas, they attacked on heaven and Indra was in trouble. So Arjuna was given a specific assignment that you come and help me to conquer all these Nimata Kavachas. And Indra's chariot driver, what's his name? Matali, yeah. So Matali, he was asked that you become the chariot driver of Arjuna. So Matali was thinking, this Indra's chariot has 10,000 horses, celestial horses. And Matali was thinking that I am serving the king of heaven and now I have been asked to drive a chariot for some earthly human being. It's a great injustice. So right from start of his assignment he was displeased that I actually asked to help someone who is actually inferior than Indra, and even Indra couldn't defeat this Nimata Kavachas, what to speak of this there. So when they were going towards that direction, Arjuna started inquiring that what are the qualities specific for this Nimata Kavachas. So this Madhali started explaining that they can appear out of their will from anywhere, they can disappear anywhere, they can attack from any direction, and you can never point out that from where exactly they are attacking. And while Arjuna was gathering all the information, suddenly they found out that chariot was just driven away and in a space downwards. And Arjuna was like, hey Matali, what's happening? And Matali told that this Nimata Kavachas, they have hold the hoofs of our horses, they are pulling them down. So Arjuna immediately took up his weapon, the Gandiva bow and arrows, and very surely shouted, cursed the Nimata Kavachas and told that if you have any fighting spirit, then appear in front of me and then fight. This group, don't attack like cowards and as if you don't have any strength. So this Nimata Kavachas thought that this person, earthly human being, what he knows about fighting, we have defeated the Indra also. So this person is, let's see what abilities he can show. Say, at a time, all the 60,000 Nimata Kavachas, they just appeared in front of Arjuna's chariot. And as soon as they appeared, everybody of them shot arrow towards Arjuna. 60,000 arrows at one shot. And Arjuna also shot one arrow. And Matali was thinking, there are 60,000 arrows in front. Even if 30,000 is the target, still 30,000 are there. And this guy shot only one arrow. And he told Arjuna, are you able to see all of them or there is some problem? So Arjuna confirmed that don't worry. And this particular direction and speed of that one arrow, Arjuna was controlling with his mind. With just one arrow, he cut through all the 60,000 arrows and came back to his favor. And Matali was thoroughly impressed. My God, all his life I am wasted to serving that Indra. He just knew only one thing. Whenever this torture attacks, just run away. You are the one. And Mahadev also excited about Arjuna's achievement. Ultimately they had war and Arjuna was able to defeat all of them, got all back the heavenly planet assistance, and Indra was very happy about that achievement. And Mahadev submitted his resignation to Indra. So Indra told him that hang on for a while, there is some history behind that. This Nyota Kavachas, when they asked the boon from Brahma, they had asked that they will not be defeated by any demigod. So for me, practically defeating them was next to impossible. But Arjuna, my own son, who has come from this earthly planet system, he is excused for that curse. So he had the abilities as well as he was fulfilling the boon of Brahma. So that time Matali thought, okay, let's give Indra one more chance to continue with him. So when Arjuna came back, and when Arjuna was after achieving his assignment, when he came back and he was with Indra, there were a lot of joyful performances were arranged. And that time all this as per heavenly protocol, all astras were dancing and all that. And Arjuna happened to look at Urvashi for a little longer time. So Indra thought that maybe he is attracted towards her. And later on he proposed Urvashi that she can approach Arjuna. So Gaurangpur explains in his class that Urvashi, means heavenly astras, they are much more beyond our imagination. Means when they take bath, the water which comes out gets the fragrant by default. So bodies are by default, they are fragrant. Their body temperature is controlled depending on the environment outside. And having all these impossible attributes, extraordinary attributes, when Urvashi, she approached Arjuna, Arjuna just straightforwardly told that, actually I was looking at you with the respect that you are one of our ancestors and I was looking at you as mother. So Arjuna, having such a superb control over his mind and in a